This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor with Thaddeus McCotter, writing in American Greatness, observing the fresh understanding of foreign affairs. There are very powerful elements in the Democratic Party who favor certain adversaries of the United States against other adversaries of the United States. It is a puzzle, and Thaddeus has found a way to present this so that the logic holds up for a while, but then it falls apart when it comes to Russia. Let us begin first about the difference between where we live right now, which is the U.S. as the supreme power on the planet, the marshal who enforces freedom, and a multipolar world. Thaddeus, a very good evening to you. Thank you for this. How is it the multipolar world is favored by the progressive left? Good evening.
Good evening to you, John. Well, if you think about how the left views the United States, especially the very hardcore fringe element of the left, which is in power in Washington right now, the left views the United States as an intrinsically racist, evil nation that has to be fundamentally transformed. So clearly, they're taking this view of the United States, taking that prism that the United States is malevolent, and then applying it to us and the Pax Americana, which the United States and her allies have built over the past 50-some years. Pardon me, actually, or almost 80-some years since World War II. So when you look at it now, John, when they say they want a multipolar world, what they're doing is they're taking their disdain for the United States and trying to fundamentally transform the world order that was created after, again, post-World War II, which has served the world rather well. So that's where they're coming from. And it takes a great leap of whataboutism and moral equivalency to get where they want to go. You and I both know that that would be with China being one of the tentpole powers in Asia, Iran, in the Middle East. And you have to ask yourself, why would the left in the United States, other than their contempt for the United States and their moral equivalency, sign on to something that would create and empower rogue genocidal nations like China, barbarous terrorist exporting nations like Iran, to be on a par with the United States in terms of world power and prestige? It makes absolutely no sense. So you go back to it must be ideological and more emotive than it is rational, clearly.
The puzzle here, I go along with China. Yes, the Biden administration very clearly making overtures to China, momentarily interrupted by a surveillance balloon, but that storm has passed. And Tehran, yes, the JCPOA of 2015 never really dies. It's beyond Dracula. Even driving a stake through its heart doesn't make it die. And Venezuela, overtures to Venezuela about oil, about exchanging hostages.
And Cuba.
And Cuba, certainly. The Obama administration paved the way for that. But now we come to a logical contradiction. And I understand politics can deal with this, but I just want to mention it. Everybody's okay, except for the people we've just named, are intimately involved with Russian power. Russia is not acceptable to these same people who vouchsafe China, correct?
That's true. And I think it is because while communist China, even Tehran to an extent, is viewed by the left as friendly or leftist governed, Russia, since the fall of the Soviet Union under Putin, is being viewed as nationalistic, is being viewed as homophobic, is being viewed as nationalistic, jingoistic, revanchist. So in short, to some extent, they view Russia as being the moral reprobate in the same way as they view the United States. And that's why they do not want Russia to be a tentpole. But at the very same time, the rogue regimes that are supporting Putin and his aggression are continuing to find favor with the left. And again, the only explanation is the left has a blind spot. If you're a leftist government or perceived by the left as where you nation which they wish to support, you can do whatever you want. And you could be a tentpole superpower.
So make Russia great again is how they view the Kremlin. It's a Russian-speaking version of the Trump approach?
Well, make no mistake, they also spent so much time investing in the Russiagate lie and turning Russia into a comic book caricature. So that Putin and Trump are basically interchangeable at this point in the mind of the left. And so it was no mistake that they linked the two of them together. This, of course, is after Obama's famous reset with Russia went down proverbial sewer.
How does this favor keep maintaining power? What does it do for the election of 24?
Oh, it really doesn't do anything, because what they'll do is they'll cast it in. They won't come out and say the United States has too much power. We need communist China to be just as powerful. We need a bunch. Iran needs to be as powerful. So we can have a coalescing of countries together to band together to battle planetary crises like climate change. Now, what they'll say is that the United States shouldn't be the world policeman, playing into the isolationist wing of the Republican Party and the peace wing of the Democratic Party. And then what they'll say is that these other nations have a right to express their views and be powerful as well, which again goes back to the moral equivalency and the moral obduracy of the left. Do you want genocidal communist China having as much say in world affairs as the United States? I think you're out of your mind. You're certainly a moral imbecile. If you think communist Venezuela, communist Cuba and fascist Venezuela, and if you think terrorist exporting Iran should have just as much say in international world and over the lives of people as the United States here at home, then you're a moral imbecile and you're out of your mind. And so, but they were not going to come out and say it that way, because it's exactly what we're saying. So they're going to find every single way to dance around the issue, to try to weasel their way into the point and try to gain power and try to gain their destructive little ends. And in the final analysis, it'll be horrible not only for the United States, but for the rest of the world.
You remind me of a conversation I had in a cafe on the Upper West Side in the early 90s with two young people. Well, we were all young at the time. A novelist and his wife, about world affairs. And I made the mistake, because I, in those days, read comic books, of calling it Red China. And this is early days, so early that there wasn't any concept called woke. There was something called politically correct language. And for a moment, his wife, who was extremely well-educated, looked at me, her eyes darkened, and she almost said something rude. And then she said, "Why do you call it Red China? Why not just China?" And I didn't have an explanation at the time. I think you just helped me solve that puzzle that stayed in my mind for more than 30 years.
Well, you know what, John? You could always have her ask a Uyghur why it's an evil nation.
Well, I didn't know about the Uyghurs then. You see, I was thrown. The word red wasn't I being consistent in the 20th century? Didn't we used to call it Red China?
It's communist China. It's what they call it. It's what they are. You know, there are 70 million card-carrying communist Chinese that are quite proud to call themselves communists. So it's run by communists. It's communist country. It's communist China.
But is the progressive left wary of that language still? Prefers to...
And the corporate right is also wary of that language, too.
Well, they have...
Because they make a lot of money off of people.
That's a motive I understand. Who benefits? I understand.
Cui bono.
Yes, but I never understood what it was that... Your storytelling reminded me of how uncomfortable I felt at that table.
The left has trouble identifying threats from the left. They just do. Ronald Reagan could understand why a fascist nation or a communist nation could be a threat to the United States. The left gives the left a pass. That's why Venezuela, Cuba. Why don't we ask some of the Cuban members of the Cuban diaspora what they think of the Castros and that gangster regime down in Havana?
Right.
I'm sure some of those woke people would be offended by that type of attitude. Of course, they've also never had their relatives and family members killed by that regime or silenced by that regime or disappeared by that regime. So they can darken their eyes and they can puff and breathe under their breath horrible things. But you're right, Mr. Batchelor. It is Red China. And it is red because of the blood of the martyrs they put on their hands and the people they kill.
That is McCarter writing in American Greatness, a recovering politician, helping me understand a 30-year-old puzzle. We're going to turn to a present puzzle, which is rescuing the banks again in the 21st century. This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor.